Before we get to this episode, just to say thanks to everyone who's bought my new book, Champion Thinking, How to Find Success Without Losing Yourself. Published by Bloomsbury, the response has been terrific. It's an Amazon bestseller. It's been top 20 in the airport charts consistently, and the reviews have been terrific right across the board. And if you like this episode that you're about to hear on Flow, you'll be sure to enjoy Champion Thinking. Head to my website, simonmundy.com, or Amazon, Waterstone, Smith's, places like that, to get your copy.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome back to the show, Simon here. I am re-releasing an old episode today, and it's a good one, all about proper nutrition with one of the top performance nutritionists in the country, James Collins, who's best known for his former role as head of nutrition at Arsenal Football Club. Now, this conversation is full of tips to make sure you fuel yourself right to have enough energy throughout the day. I'm releasing a previous episode as basically I'm having a short 3-week break and holiday in which I will still be releasing content, including some of my favorite older episodes and of course the bite-sized episodes. Then in 3 weeks, we will be firing the new episodes back up, and we've got some really exciting things planned, which I'm excited to share with you. But first, in the meantime, here is James Collins.
Good morning, Simon.
How are you?
I'm really well, thanks, yeah.
I'm really excited to have you here. You know I'm a huge fan of your book.
Yes.
And the energy is literally coursing through my veins because I've been applying the principles that you talk about.
I can feel it in the room.
You can.
I can actually feel it, Simon, yeah.
I mean, who doesn't want more energy?
It's true, yep.
And the principles of sport can be applied to any sphere of life.
I think that's absolutely right, yeah.
Before we get into the nuts and bolts of how someone can crank up their energy or adjust their energy according to what they're up to, let's talk about you. You do, first of all, you look very well.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're a walking embodiment of your plan.
I felt the pressure, Simon, to come on.
You've got a healthy glow about you, so I'd be a bit suspicious if you turned up looking rough as anything. So,
who's this ill-looking nutritionist that's struggling to make it up the stairs?
But you look good. So, James, you have worked with some real top level elite sports people, teams. You spent the most time with Arsenal Football Club. How long were you with them?
I was with them for 7 seasons.
7 seasons.
Simon, yeah.
Arsene Wenger. I mean, he's a man who likes the details.
He is, yeah. He was incredible guy to work with. And I joined them in 2010. So I remember distinctly having my last interview with Arsene as well, who was known for bringing nutrition into football.
Of course.
And, worked very close with Arsene and the players there and, part of our team at the club. And it was a really interesting role because I think Olympic sport's a bit more noted for applying nutrition.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a bit more talked about, would you say?
I don't know. I mean, possibly. I hadn't really thought about it, to be honest with you. Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, so looking back in time, we hear probably more stories around nutrition and cycling, more stories around nutrition and track and field, for example. But I think nutrition's really come on in football, over the last decade. And the role there was really interesting because we had a team of specialists that worked with the players. There's obviously nutrition, but you're working with strength and conditioning, with a biomechanics, with a doctor, and you were working with them to help them perform better, essentially.
Mm.
And probably most importantly for me as a nutritionist, we had a team of chefs. because we've got to, essentially we've got to turn these recommendations into something practical that the player's going to eat.
And if it works for footballers, and these guys are performing, you know, a couple of times a week, often, if you know, Champions League, Premier League, so they need to be able to fuel right. So the principles, if it works for them, it really does suggest to me that clearly it can work for absolutely anyone and what they're trying to achieve in their life.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think even if we look at football being one example of performance, you know, as I mentioned before, I mean, my background initially was track and field, you know, working with our Olympic teams prior to Beijing 2008. And the role really was looking at nutrition and endurance performance. So how can that can help our endurance runners last longer, get better times? And also for our sprinters, improving strength and power. So in effect, nutrition is used to improve performance across all these different sports. But I think now, you know, especially the state we are as a society, more people getting into exercise and fitness, nutrition is really important to help you get more from your workout, whether you're someone who's running their first marathon next month or whether you're someone who's just starting a park run. Or, you know, even if you're someone who's at the other end of the spectrum and is just getting a bit more physically active and wants to have more energy to perform better at work. You know, a lot of us, you know, a lot of people in this building here today are, you know, be working long hours and have pressure to be productive both at work and probably at home with their families too. And nutrition and how you fuel your body has a really crucial role to play in that.
But there is one prerequisite, which is that you need to be active to some degree, don't you?
That's absolutely right. It is absolutely non-negotiable. And, you know, this is for people who are training and are serious about their training. But ultimately, and this is the same for a lot of people that I see in the practice, they come through and they're waiting and wanting to make a life change. So they might have be 40 years old and had a health scare. They might be someone who was, you know, really active when they were 20. Their career's just taken over and they're reaching 40. They've got a couple of kids and they're saying, look, I need to do something about this. Yeah. And, you know, the first step really is getting active and tailoring that, but also just starting to tailor your nutrition. And I think tailoring's the right word because often it doesn't need to be turned upside down, but there are certain principles that you can apply to your eating to help you have more energy, but, you know, also to have a strong immune system and to recover well.
I read books for so many of my podcasts. I can't tell you how many books I've read since starting this. And I read yours and I have literally applied the principles. And I can honestly, hand on my heart, say I've noticed that my energy's improved. You've got like a checklist in there of how to make sure that you, I think you call it moving the needle forward.
Exactly so, yeah.
And you've got a checklist of things like your sleep, your mood, your energy, so on and so forth. And
That's right.
I can honestly say that I have noticed just by following your relatively simple principles that those have improved. So it's called The Energy Plan. A great quote as well from Arsene. James's pioneering use of food as fuel has transformed performances. From Arsene Wenger, OBE on the front of it. Right, let's get into the nuts and bolts of it. The first thing that I think is quite a nice thing to bear in mind that you talk about is just thinking of the body as an engine.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And the analogy of a car is a really good one, isn't it? And, you know, effectively, the car taking its fuel to produce energy for movement, that's the same as our body. And, you know, essentially, we're taking in food, our metabolism is burning that for energy, you know, to fuel our body's movement, to fuel our body's growth and repair. And I think it's really important, first up, that we understand a bit about the engine. And that's what I've tried to sort of labour a bit in the book. And we discussed this earlier on, that I think unless we understand a bit more about how our body works, it's really difficult to then talk about the type of fuels because we're talking quite superficially, aren't we? And then that's when we're open to different opinions and different things. So I think understanding about your body and how it uses food for fuel is like a first step. And I think once we've mastered that, then we've got the roles of these different fuels in the body and essentially what they do, right?
Yeah. So what are the principles then in terms of thinking of the body, you know, as an engine, in terms of how we burn fuels? What are the things we need to know before we get into the, you know, the different types?
I think before we get into the detail, I think broadly that we've got our digestive system and our food passes down through this digestive system, through the stomach, absorbed through the small intestine, the majority, you know, of the nutrients. And then it's passed to the muscles and to the brain to create energy, or in the case of proteins, which we'll discuss, to help with growth and repair. Mm-hmm. And these different nutrients, these different fuels, all have different functions. And it's probably a good time to explain what those are, right?
Right. Let's get into it. In layman's terms, carbs, proteins,
yes,
fats.
Carbs, protein, fat, and also water.
And how do you refer to them? Because you've got your own sort of ways of talking about them.
Yeah, and we use the same language here that we use in sport, which I think is really important, and that's because of their function. So, for example, at the start, we've got our fuels for energy, which are carbohydrate and fat. And there's obviously a huge debate in the media And our physiology of our body hasn't changed much over the last 20 years, you know, believe it or not, contrary to what we hear. And that we use fat and carbohydrate to produce fuel for energy. Now, interestingly, it depends on what we're doing. So when we're walking around day to day, walking down the pavement, going to get some lunch, and it's lower intensity, our body prefers to use fat as its main source of fuel, which is quite interesting.
That is interesting.
If we look at the other end of the spectrum, and we're doing some really quite intense training, sprinting, high-intensity training, our metabolism shifts and prefers to use carbohydrate as its main source of fuel because it can break it down into energy quicker. And when we're in the middle, we're using a mixture of the two. So I think when we know that, it starts to everything starts to become clearer because we don't need to emit carbs, we don't need to emit fats. Actually, our metabolism is really flexible. And the term we use is metabolic flexibility, which I think is a lovely term. You know, there's no yoga poses or anything like that. It does. It's beautiful. And it just describes that our metabolism uses different fuels at different times.
Okay. So long walk. Someone's going for a long walk. They're going to be burning fat. I think this is quite interesting. Mm-hmm. That's right. Someone who's doing a spin class, they're going to be burning more glucose. Which comes to the carbs.
Exactly, and that's stored in the muscles as muscle glycogen. So it's probably quite important to note that our carbohydrate stores are stored in the body as glycogen, so storage of carbohydrate in both the liver and the muscles. Now, the interesting thing is that, well, if we look at fat, most of us have got too much, right? 62.7% of the UK are overweight. We've got too much fat. So we're really interested in how we can tap into using more of our own fat as a fuel. That's really logical. We've got a different approach with carbohydrates because we can only store a really limited amount. So I think it's always really handy to think of carbohydrate levels a bit like the fuel gauge in your car. And we need to keep them topped up. We don't always need to have lots of carbohydrates so we're on full. But when we get down to empty, that's when we see a host of problems that we'll probably talk about later. But the role is for us to keep enough carbohydrates in our intake each day. And of course, not all carbohydrates are created equally, right?
Yeah, you're preempting my next question. Getting ahead of it.
Is that right?
You can see it in my eyes, couldn't you? This is a really important question because actually a guy here, he was asking me because he's preparing for a marathon.
Right.
And he was actually saying, oh, I'm feeling a bit washed out, a bit drained. And you know, I was immediately thinking, hey, I've read James's book. Let me help you. Sit down. Come into my office. And he was talking about it. And I said, look, you need to up your fuel when you're going for these big runs. Not necessarily on the days you're not. And he immediately said, oh, okay, so what I should be going is having a lot more pasta. And immediately I'm thinking, whoa, not quite that simple, is it?
Yeah.
Because we've got high GI and low GI, which is the key thing for me about carbs. Am I right?
Yeah, no, I think you put that really well. So we're looking at the type. So with each nutrient, we're really concerned with the type of nutrients because they're not all created equally. Carbohydrates, so we've got our higher glycemic index carbohydrates, which are essentially more sugary and are absorbed very quickly into the bloodstream, which cause a spike in blood glucose, but then drop off very quickly.
Okay, give us a few examples.
So a few examples could be things like Coca-Cola, could be things like fruit juice, could be things like very processed cereal bars.
Okay.
So those are things that would...
They're super high.
Yeah, those would be high GI carbohydrates.
And then what about your white bread, your white pasta, stuff like that?
So again, white bread would sit in
right
this high...
That.
Yeah, the more processed carbohydrates, as a general rule, would be on the higher end of the glycemic index. Where we're going to focus is on the lower end, right? And the lower glycemic index carbohydrates are typically the more whole grain examples that contain more fibre. So it's absorbed more slowly and turned into blood glucose more slowly. So you get this slower energy release, which, you know, whether you're an athlete or someone going to work, you know, drip feeding this energy and regulating your blood glucose is really important. And some examples then of these lower GI carbohydrates might be things like porridge oats, might be buckwheat, quinoa, things like whole wheat examples of pasta would be a better option there. And then also not forgetting things like our wild rice or wild mixed with basmati rice, something like this, and the more processed whole grains. So those are the examples that when we talk about carbs, they're not equal. So it's really important, I think, we define early on when we're going to mention, and probably today, which ones our focus are going to be on.
My go-to.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Sweet potato.
Sweet potato.
Yeah. Is that's low GI?
It is. It also depends on how it's cooked.
Oh, blimey, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I tend to roast it.
So roasting it increases...
Or mash. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah. Or you got to keep going. So yes, often the way that the foods are cooked and prepared can affect the GEI too. Okay. So for example, sometimes when carbohydrate foods are heated and then left to cool, that lowers the GEI slightly. But as a general rule, if we're going to compare sweet potato and potato, the GEI will be lower. And that's a good, more nutrient-rich example too, and I think we'll probably come on to.
Yeah.
I don't want to jump the gun.
No, okay. Hopefully we've got carbs there. All right, okay, so the key takeaways, carbs, fuel. We want to think of it like that fuel gauge to keep it topped up without it being full, and better to have low GEI carbs that are going to have that sustained release of energy over a period of time rather than the stuff that's going to have a big spike. up, down kind of vibe.
I love that, and I even love that you did the graph with your hand as well.
That was getting into it.
It was perfect.
Okay, so that's carbs. You mentioned fibre. We'll come to that in a bit. So carbs is fuel. Protein, and you refer to that as the...
So that's your maintenance foods. And we call it your maintenance foods because it's involved from maintaining everything from skin, hair, bones, hormones, antibodies. But we're going to talk about it most for muscles.
Yeah.
And it's probably protein's the area where there's been most research, I think, over the last 5 years. We've got some amazing research labs in McMaster in Canada and also in the Netherlands as well. And I think we've learned a lot more about how our muscles essentially are constantly adapting. And what I mean by that is they're constantly building and breaking down. You know, if you think about yourself or someone who's gone into hospital and they've had a cast on their leg, you know, how quickly that breaks down, how quickly atrophy happens.
I told you.
It's amazing, right?
I had knee surgery last year.
Yes.
And so I was on the couch for, 4 or 5 weeks, came off, and I mean, it was like...
How was it?
I've never seen anything so pathetic in all my life.
Who is this?
It's only just... I've never been one to have, big legs, but this thing was unbelievable. It just disappeared.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, and that's an example of, what's happening over these 24 hours. But, on the plus side as well, when you're doing some training or you're putting some stress through the muscles, you're causing the initial breakdown in the muscle fibres, having some protein helps the muscles to grow, repair, and to build more strongly. Now, the one thing that we've learned more about from the research in the last 5 years is it's not just a case of doing your exercise session, having some protein in your meal or a protein shake and it's done. We know that after a session, your muscles are still adapting over 24 hours afterwards, which is pretty amazing, isn't it? I always think every time we say that, because what you eat in the day after you've trained is going to help your gains, as we would like to say now, right?
Gains.
Your gains with a Z.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, so protein, in a nutshell, is just about maintaining it. We're thinking of it mainly as a sort of muscle maintainer.
Yeah, that's your maintenance, yeah.
Okay, and it can be as well something that we need to very much consider up to 24 hours or 24 hours after we're exercising.
Yeah, it's something that we're going to have constantly in the diet, and we almost call it pulses. So in terms of having a constant pulse with each meal and each snack. So it's something you're constantly getting new proteins and their constituent part, which are amino acids, these building blocks that are transported in the blood and taken up into the muscle to build this new solid structure.
Actually, that got me thinking, because we spoke about carbs and high GI and low GI.
Yeah.
Obviously, we live in a world where veganism and offshoots are pretty big time.
Absolutely, yeah.
And reading your book, it was interesting to find out that it's harder to get your full proteins if you're not eating, say, chicken.
You just need to be better planned. So we have, have a lot of clients now. We have a lot of footballers now. Who are vegan. And it's just a case of understanding what foods provide these. Now, typically, more of these animal-based foods combine complete proteins. And what I mean by complete proteins is they have the full spectrum of these 20 amino acid building blocks. And those are typically from things like our meats, our fish, our poultry. But also, complete proteins are buckwheat, quinoa, and soybeans too. So we've got some plant-based options there straight off the bat. Now, often we've got the other type, we've got our incomplete proteins, which are mainly from plant sources. Now, these can still be combined to make complete proteins. So, the traditional one we always hear about is combining different types of beans with rice to give that full spectrum. But it's totally possible, and it doesn't necessarily need to occur at the same meal. If we're doing that over the same day, we can still get this complementary protein.
I think that's probably what puts me off, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
It seems like it's quite a lot more thought needs to go into it. Probably doesn't, one of that, once you get used to it. But for me, I know, okay, if I'm having chicken or salmon, boom, I'm not thinking, hang on, have I got the complete spectrum? There it is.
Yeah, that's right. It just needs more planning. Yeah, absolutely. So straight off, so someone who's going from a meat-based diet and going into a vegan diet, initially it's an education process, looking at different types of foods, how these fit together. But you can still achieve with both.
Okay, so those are the proteins. So we've done fuels, which are your carbs, and we've done protein, which is your maintenance. And now we're on to fat. Which is, hot topic again, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, good fat, bad fat.
Yeah, exactly so. And as we've said, you know, the fats really have a role as a fuel for the body, but they also have a role as a protection, you know, food as well. And the research around fat isn't as concrete as it is for carbohydrate and for protein. It's moving very quickly. You know, one of the things that we know with fats in the diet as well is we're focusing on these healthy type of fats that we hear a lot about. So our polyunsaturated and monounsaturated fats, such as our olives, olive oil, our walnuts, things like our oily fish, herring, mackerel, salmon, you know, so having examples and focusing our intake around more of these healthy types of fats.
So you've got in your book the traffic light, isn't it? So
yeah, that's right.
Red, amber, green.
Yes.
So red, less of, amber,
reduce.
And green are up. So yeah. Give us a couple of examples of the sort of fats that people should be looking to do those three things.
Yeah, so avoiding the trans fats. You know, and typically with a lot of processed foods now, there's been a big push to cut these down in things like pasties, pastries, and biscuits as well. So we're avoiding the trans fats. The saturated fats in some of our processed meats, sausages, bacon, and other examples, we're looking to reduce. And then we're trying to, as we've said, we're trying to increase, you know, replace those essentially with some of our healthier fats, our mono and polyunsaturated fats.
Okay.
So I think the traffic light system, it works really well because we're just trying to guide from one and increase the other, the more healthy examples.
So olive oil.
Yes.
A bit more of that.
Yeah, that's right.
Flaxseed,
chia seeds as well, good examples. Walnuts,
okay. Okay, so nuts, olive oil, mm-hmm. olives, that kind of stuff. And yeah. Any other really obvious things that where places people can get more of the good fats?
The good fats, oily fish.
Bingo.
Oily, there it is. The oily fish, herring, mackerel, salmon as well. You know, yeah. So getting more oily fish into your diet as well. So this might mean, again, there's a crossover here to our maintenance foods. It might mean then using, you know, let's say a portion of fish to tick both boxes as well.
Annoyingly, like I like prawns and I like salmon, but when I was growing up, I always remember around the time I was having breakfast, Mum would be feeding the cat.
Right.
And my sister would be eating tuna and she knew I hated the smell. She'd like waft it under my nose, older sister, you know, horrible older sister stuff.
Right.
The smell still gets me. And so it puts, so I'm not a fan of fishy fish. I don't like
that
it.
That sounds horrible.
It's bullying.
It is.
Hang your head in shame. But so that annoys me that I don't enjoy those fishy fish. So for people like myself, obviously I do make sure I get salmon. I have salmon once or twice a week.
Yes.
And I do like prawns and stuff like that. But by not having like mackerel and herring and stuff like that, am I really missing out?
Well, no, I think with a combination of all these different fuels that we talk about, there's a combination of foods that you can hit all of them. So, you know, I always say to people, look, it's just a case of finding what option suits you, you know, suits your taste as well. Often for a lot of people, just having some extra virgin olive oil with your salad at lunch or with dinner, you know, is a really easy way to get that serving. And also, you know, easy to manage in a restaurant too.
Yeah. Okay.
So there are really simple ways to get these things done.
Okay, fine. So I don't need to panic.
Don't panic.
No panicking. All right. Okay. Put my mind at rest. So fat, we've done. Protein, we've done. Carbs, we've done. So micronutrients.
Micronutrients, yeah. Not talked about enough.
Yeah.
So micronutrients are our protection foods. And micronutrients, and what we mean by those, is our vitamins, minerals, our phytonutrients that come from our fruits and vegetables. And they have a really important role for maintaining our cellular health. And also, as we mentioned in the book as well, maintaining immunity. And I think probably they're the least talked about because we know in the UK at the moment, only 26% of people are getting their five a day, which is, come on, what's going on?
Up your game.
Yeah. But, so, you know, the message with a lot of these things and being quite realistic with them as well is we're looking for, you know, progress, not necessarily perfection with these as well. And just finding ways to incorporate more different types of vegetables and fruits into our like daily routine. And one of the things that we talk about within the book as well is just using, you know, two different handfuls or using different types or different portions of vegetables with your meals and just trying to get a bit creative with it as well, really.
Are some sort of fruits and veggies better than others? I always hear about leafy greens.
Yeah, leafy greens are excellent. Leafy greens are a great source of folate, which is important for red blood cell production. But it's really the variety that's key. Because we've got some vegetables, for example, some berries, that will provide us a great source of antioxidants, which is really important for cellular repair, both with aging, but also for response from exercise as well. After heavy training, it helps our muscles to recover. So we've got all these different types of vegetables and fruits which contain these compounds. And I think it's really about getting enough variety, first of all. We could sit here and really over-science it and look at all the different types of micronutrients and put that into a chart. But ultimately, I think there's a simpler way to do that.
Okay. Someone listening who's thinking, I probably don't hit my five a day,
yeah,
you know, as much as I should. What's an easy way for them to get the message of how important it is?
I mean, a really easy way to get the message is, I always think you've got to go for function first, right? And I think one of the things that we know is that, like we said, only 26% of people get hitting the five a day. And they have a crucial role in terms of, you know, boosting your immune system. But as you're getting older as well, helping to reduce disease risk. So, like, you know, for, you know, and perhaps when I speak to people who are in their 20s and 30s, it's not so much of an issue. But as we're looking at people who are aging and looking from anywhere from 40s plus, increasing the amount of vegetables in the diet becomes extremely important to reduce mortality risk. So actually, even if you're increasing your daily intake by one portion each day, you know, that's a really positive step. So even if, you know, you're stuck on two portions a day, if you can consistently reach three, four, you know, that can have a really profound impact on your lifestyle.
So death and illness, that's something to sort of bet.
it's really positive. We've gone from performance to illness, yeah.
Death and illness.
Yeah.
But that's something to think about there, I think, is I was chatting to a guy who's put his back out here yesterday. And, you know, we all know what it's like having a cold or being ill or whatever.
Yeah.
And when we're normal, let's say, we all get, you know, hung up on deadlines and this work and maybe some drama in our personal life or whatever. And that's easy to do. But then as soon as we're ill, boom, that all just, it just falls away. And I think that, you know, everyone knows that being ill is grim. And health is just first and foremost. You know, if you haven't got health, you've got nothing, basically.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And at the moment as well, if we look at aging as an example, we've got an aging population. And the question for a lot of people is, you know, how do you maintain the quality of life for longer? You know, to be more active. And, you know, some examples that we've given there is about people are still performing at their peak in their 50s, 60s and, you know, and 70s. So it is really important. And I think probably one of the key barriers is the behaviour change aspect of ageing and nutrition. Because, you know, a lot of the times I have clients and even my parents and relatives as well, who you're suddenly asking to do some resistance exercise, you know, to stress their muscles more to stop this sarcopenia, this muscle wasting with age, or you're, you know, you're asking them to eat more protein with breakfast, because we know that's one area where the elderly population don't eat a sufficient amount of protein. But these changes take time, right? And if someone's going to go into the gym for the first time, it takes a bit of confidence too. You have to learn all these different things. So there's a couple of barriers there as well, but the impact we can have there is extremely important.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
just something I want to pick up there, the importance of resistance training.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's another. We're putting that down as a non-negotiable, aren't we?
It is. Yeah, it is. Absolutely so. And I think that's for people who are younger. You know, that's for people in the 30s, 40s. But again, as we see the body start to age, you know, from late 30s onwards, we start to see the metabolic rate, our metabolism slow down. We start to see muscle mass reduce, you know, decade after decade. To combat that, we need this resistance exercise, which places stress on the major muscle groups, which causes you to maintain strength and also lean muscle mass. Mm. And this isn't just about running a marathon or isn't just about performing better. This is also just about moving, about your, you know, getting around day to day too. So it's a really big area, and I think one that's getting a bit more headlines. Yeah. Now, but you know, there's a few of these performance nutrition principles, definitely around the resistance exercise, definitely around the maintenance foods and the timings that really transfer.
From your book, you're not a huge fan of spending hours in the gym lifting silly weights, are you?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I wanted to put that in the book, Simon, because obviously I've been involved in sport all of my life and working with sports teams. So you're working with strength and conditioning coaches who live in the gym and people who love that side of it. I've always preferred running, and I've never really enjoyed being in the gym for an hour and a half. And the phrase we've used in the book is minimal effective dose. So I was speaking to my strength and conditioning colleagues and saying, well, look, what's essentially the minimal time that I can do in the gym with still getting the same result with my muscles? And you know, and I found that dose response, you know, how you can maintain your strength and mass. And that's something now that more people are looking for. We've seen more research recently that, you know, a workout can be anything from 13 to 20 minutes to get that sufficient dose. It means when you're in the gym lifting, you know, you have to work hard, but it's possible to get your dose of exercise in a shorter period of time. So I think for most of us, and probably most people listening, we're trying to reduce these barriers to entry. Mm. And if you don't particularly like the gym, there's ways that you can do that, not necessarily in a gym scenario, or even if you do go to a gym, you can be in and out quite quickly.
Okay. So can you get a minimal effective dose from body weight stuff, like doing press-ups, squats, stuff like that? Or do you need to have that weight?
You can get a dose from doing body weight exercise, but I think ideally adding that weight as well. I mean, one of these key things is getting progression as well with what you're doing, what you're lifting, so that your muscles are getting stronger as well.
Okay.
Because they'll get used to the stimulus.
Okay. All right. So just file under must do. Okay?
Must do, exactly.
Okay, last one. So we've done micronutrients, fuels, fat, protein, water. As you sip a glass, look at that.
You timed that perfectly.
As you took a little sip. So, water. Obviously, need it to live, but a lot of people aren't getting enough of it. What more do we need to bear in mind when it comes to drinking water and hydrating generally?
I think hydrating generally, yeah, it is one that's often forgotten. And I think when you bring exercise into this straight away, one of the things we know that happens when we exercise is we sweat to regulate our body temperature. And one of the things that can happen if we're not careful is we become dehydrated. So we don't drink a sufficient amount either during our session, or let's make this a really practical example for maybe for a listener who's going to do their HIIT session before work. They're having a huge blast for 45 minutes, they're sweating buckets, and they're in a rush to get back to their desk and start the working day post-shower. Now, they might have lost a good amount of sweat. Now, anything over 2% of body weight lost, so let's say for a person who weighs 70 kilograms, that's almost 1.5 litres, that starts to affect not only your physical performance, but your mental performance too. So it's really important that we rehydrate to maintain our fluid balance. Now, obviously, using a sporting example here, we have matches in Champions League, World Cups, where you're playing extremely humid environments, and sweat losses can be anything up to 3 litres an hour, which is huge, right? Because you're having to replace all of this fluid, because we know that even 2% loss in dehydration, this can equal 5% loss in physical performance. As soon as it gets hotter, the effect on physical performance is even more, and it can be up to 50%. So it's absolutely huge. So I think for all the listeners, it's just about being mindful with your water and rehydrating. You can still drink to first, but I think it's just, especially if you're training and you're exercising, especially now we're closing on a London Marathon, so some people can be doing some longer runs, just being a little bit more mindful with how much you're drinking too.
Is it the 2 litres that everyone talks about?
For someone who's sedentary and not exercising, I think that's a ballpark figure. I think if you're training and exercising a lot, then the amount goes up.
Pump it up, exactly.
I'm
big into sort of hacks and like little gizmos and stuff. And this thing, That's my water bottle. Right,
that is a Rolls Royce of water bottles. Look how bright it is.
it's electric blue. But this was a cracking investment. I got this about a year ago or something like that. And just carrying that around, I think that's a litre and a half.
Mm.
And I'll always have, you know, one or two of them if I'm at work. And I notice when I'm at home, I just don't think to use this of a weekend. And I don't drink as much when I haven't got this, you know, in my near vicinity.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm going to jump slightly, if I may, because, you know, one of the things you mentioned there about being at home as well is that a lot of behaviours don't shift when you're at home. And I don't want to sort of jump into too much detail and ruin a future question, but, you know, the hydration, there's one example. We've got lots of people who are really good with their nutrition, their exercise when they're at work each day. You know, they know exactly what they're doing. When they're working from home 1 or 2 days a week, as increasingly people are, that's when the habits sort of go out the window. You know, the exercise drops off, the walk to work's gone, but also, like you're saying, the hydration. So I think sometimes we have to work even harder to instill these, we call them winning behaviours, but to instill these at home.
Absolutely. So we know what we're working with now. We've got our tools.
We have got the tools.
Before we get on to like how to build a plate for whatever we're up to, a couple of little questions that I just want to, so we'll just rattle through these. Think of this as quickfire. People talk about low-carb diets.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've talked about it a few. What do you make of low-carb diets? Generally, the idea of just a general low-carb diet.
A general low-carb diet, you know, bad idea because it lacks context. Everything has got to be relevant to your physical demands.
Okay. Actually, something else we haven't mentioned. We're going to quickly route through fibre, the importance of fibre. We don't get enough, do we?
Yeah, so fibre, hugely important for digestion, but not only for gut motility, so to get the food through the intestines, but also to feed the bacteria in your intestines as well. You're having this prebiotic effect to feed the bacteria in your intestines to keep a healthy gut, which is obviously extremely important for your immune system. Yeah. You know, one of your first lines of defense, which is, you know, extremely important. So, and we obviously mentioned earlier on fiber and its role to slow the release of glucose.
Okay, everyone needs to up their fiber. You mentioned it there, gut health, probiotics. You talk about it in the book. Anyone who's listened to this podcast knows that I'm a milk kefir man, a water kefir man. We make kefir, kombucha, the whole shebang. Also prebiotics, all this stuff. We won't get too nerdy on it.
I was extremely impressed. I listened to one of the earlier podcasts and very impressive.
I'm evangelical about things like kefir. But so probiotics.
Yeah.
For people who aren't a bit eccentric like me and don't want to make this stuff at home, how important are they and where's the best places to get probiotics? So good bacteria.
Yeah, so probiotics are very important. And again, this is an area where we're learning more about the gut, the microbiome, as well, and the environment there that promotes good bacteria and its role of not just immunity, but it's linked to the brain. You know, we're learning more about this brain-gut axis too. Yeah, and the links and the messaging back and forth. So that's extremely interesting. In the book, we've mentioned probiotics under the immunity banner, first of all, because this is probably one of the few things around immunity that's got good supporting evidence, and especially for use during long-haul travel or during times where you're feeling run down. A good quality probiotic, which would be a strain, a lactobacillus strain, which provides, approximately 10 billion active strains there, is something that we would look to focus on that has good supporting evidence.
Yeah.
In terms of the foods that it provides, the one thing we're struggling with at the moment is trying to find the dose and effect with like the kefir, the kombucha and others. But with everything we do with performance nutrition, we're looking at going food first.
Yeah.
So it's something that we can do. And again, if we're going back to looking at our plates and these different protection foods, that is something that could be used there and you can try out. So whether you've got some GI issues or whether you've got issues with your immunity, like you're doing with the kefir that I listened to, you can try out these different protection foods and try out these different foods that are higher in probiotics.
Right, now let's get on to how we put it all together. So you talk about compiling a plate, putting a plate together. What are the basic plate rules?
I want to start from the beginning with this, if you don't mind, just to sort of, paint the picture that the reason we came for building the plate was, again, at Arsenal, we used to have our restaurant where we would encourage the players to eat in a certain way. So what we would do at each station, we would lay out the different foods in order so players could essentially build what we called the performance plate. Now, step one of the performance plate was always their maintenance food, so having a serving of protein. Now, step two was always adding the fuel, the lower glycemic index carbohydrates. And this typically, if we use an example before training, You know, so they're going to do an afternoon training session. You're coming in for lunch and you're building your plates. You're adding your maintenance food, serving your fuel. Third step is our protection foods. So adding a thing of our mixed vegetables and then also adding a small serving of good fats to that as well. And also not forgetting our water. Now, that in essence, we are building our first plate, which is called our fueling plate. And our fueling plate broadly consists of a third of the plates, our proteins, our maintenance foods, a third of the plates, our lower GI glycemic index carbohydrates, our fuel, and a third of the plates are mixed fruits and vegetables, which are protection foods. So we've got our plate, and the idea of that plate is that this is something that will help sustain our energy during that afternoon for either a training session, or it's also something that's applicable whether you've just got a long afternoon, for example, you're running around at work or another requirement.
Load of meetings, so on and so forth.
Exactly so. So you've got that fueling element there.
Okay.
Now, the other aspect with this as well is, depending on the needs of the day, what you eat should change. So a classic example would be, you know, let's say we had the players in at lunchtime. In the afternoon, we've got a recovery session or the players are in the pool. They're expending next to no energy, so they don't need to fuel for anything. Immediately, what we had on the walls of the cafeteria, we have the different screens. I'm just looking up at your screen here, trying to visualise it. I'm pointing at it. I don't know what I'm doing. But with the screens, we're trying to promote that players would start with a maintenance portion. They would have a slightly bigger portion of the maintenance foods, a bigger portion of the mixed vegetables, and they will remove the fuel totally. So the plate essentially looks like half maintenance foods, half proteins, and half protection foods, so half vegetables. And what we're doing with that is really reducing the amount of carbohydrates because there's no real need for those during the afternoon session. And so effectively, what we're doing over the course of the day for most people, we've got our fueling plate and we've got our maintenance plate, and we use different varieties of those depending on your demands of the day.
Okay, so a quick recap here. Mm. So a day for me would be, let's say, a day where I'm going to the gym.
Yeah.
Normal-ish gym session. So let's say 15, 20 minutes of running and a bit of weights.
Yeah.
Okay. And for someone else, it might be back-to-back meetings where they've got to be on form. So yep. A day like that, they should be thinking about having a performance plate.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and that is breaking it down into thirds. So you've got your carbs, your protein, and then your veg and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly so. So effectively, your day then would have your fueling plates. You know, your fueling plate, let's say for breakfast, you'd have either your training session or your meetings during the day, your fueling plate for lunch. And then we're using a generalized example here. But for most people, most of their activity levels running around all day and most of their exercise is done during the day. So that will mean that the evening they've got less need to take on extra fuel. So that evening meal can be a maintenance plate.
Okay, so maintenance plate, just to recap on that, you're cutting down your carbs, but still having your protein.
Proteins and mixed vegetables.
And mixed vegetables.
Exactly
okay.
That.
And you make an interesting point in the book, which is that it's easy to get it the wrong way around, isn't it? That people are under-fueling in the day at the time at which they need to be fueled up, and then going hell for leather at night when they get home, when they don't need that. You know, they're fueling themselves to go to sleep, essentially.
It's such a classic. It's fueling based on habit. You know, so people will run around each day. It's a slice of toast before you go out the door. It's the same sandwich you're used to at lunch. And you get home at 6 o'clock, you rustle around in a local metro supermarket and you're absolutely ravenous. And, you know, the two things here are that, you know, you haven't actually proactively fueled yourself to have the energy to be at your best during the day, either during a training session or your best at work. And I think even just with a couple of examples of how we can tailor that, probably an example is with how you've restructured your day as well, right? It's not big changes, but it's about knowing how to compose these meals and using them at the right time.
And we'll give my example imminently. I'd be a fool if I wasn't going to take advantage and go through mine specifically. You do talk about competition plates. I think for the benefit of this podcast, I think it's worth just sort of focusing on so people don't get too much information overload. Because the key, I think, for Joe Public, me and people listening, it's fueling plate and maintenance plate. Those are the two.
Absolutely so. And without going into huge detail, this third plate, this competition plate is just, it's more carbs when you're preparing for the London Marathon or if you're a footballer or you're doing, you know, a huge event. So it's not, for most of us day to day, improving fitness, those two plates are perfect.
You mentioned that if we're in the gym, our bodies are still working up to 24 hours later.
Yeah.
Okay, so how does our fueling plate and our maintenance plate factor that in? So let's say someone goes to the gym lunchtime, middle of the day, they're going to the gym lunchtime. How should they be doing their fueling plate, maintenance plate, just before, just after, and, you know, in the 24 hours afterwards?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And this depends, Because one of the things that we haven't touched on here is depending on what the goal is.
Right.
So basically, if we take a step backwards and if we're looking at fueling our training session at the gym, what we eat before has a huge effect on how our body adapts. And there's two ways that we can approach this. Firstly, we've discussed fueling. So it means that we've got sufficient carbohydrates. It just means that our body can perform as good as it possibly can during our session. Easy, done. The second principle is that if we're trying to make our body adapt, and we're trying to make our body adapt to burn more fat as a fuel during that session, if we're doing that, that means that we're going to either have a maintenance plate, so have lower carbs, or we might even, if we're doing it in the morning, train fasted. Because the main tool that we've got to make our body burn more fat during training is to restrict carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a couple of caveats with this, or a couple of important things to consider. Now, by restricting carbohydrate, and anyone who knows listening who's training fasted will know that it just feels more difficult, mm-hmm. right? Because you haven't got the fuel. So you're really having to push your body to adapt. And this takes a bit of getting used to. So it's something that you need to, you know, build up your tolerance to. The other important aspect with this as well is it's something that if you're doing it a lot or you're doing it during very heavy sessions, it can reduce your immunity. So we've always got to be aware that it can be a tool to help us burn fat.
Yeah, so setting the goal is really important.
Yes, absolutely. It's critical.
So it might be, like you mentioned there, losing body fat. For me, it was just, okay, more energy, want to be able to think clearer, sleep better, quite a generic, but still, for me, like fairly easily defined, which is why I was leaning towards more like fueling plate and maintenance plate rather than training low, as you call it. So yes, cutting those carbs right back and struggling through a workout.
That's a tool to help your muscles use more fat as a fuel during the session. But if you're going to reduce your body fat over the course of the day, you still need to be in negative energy balance.
Okay.
So it's just a tool to burn more fat during that session.
Right, okay. So spell out what your goal is and work it around that. A quick question for you about training. You talk about the four R's in terms of recovery from training. So what are they?
Yes, the four R's. Firstly is refuel. So that's refueling our carbohydrate stores after a hard training session. That's our storage of our muscle glycogen. So having some carbohydrates soon after training.
What would that look like?
So that could be a variety of things. For most people who have done a training session, it's using your next meal.
Right.
So this, for example, could be your lunch, making sure you've got a portion of couscous, a portion of quinoa, a portion of buckwheat, you know, a portion of rice, you know, something like that as part of your lunch. If we use a really extreme example, you know, for athletes who have just performed in a match, their recovery, they need to take on board lots of carbohydrate-based snacks, because they will have performed and expended a lot more energy. But for most people listening, it's just making sure that your meal or your snack afterwards contains some carbs.
That's first. What are the rest?
Second is repair. Okay. And that's ensuring that we've got a serving of protein with our recovery meal or snack to start that repair process. And as we mentioned earlier on, the focus with our protein is making sure we've got a regular intake over the course of the day. But that's important at this timing too.
Number three?
Three is rehydrate.
Get on our water.
We've done that one. We've got a blue bottle there as well. So yeah, the three is rehydrate as well, and the fourth one is rest.
Right.
And probably one again that can be overlooked. I think one of the biggest mistakes that I see is when people embark on a new program, or even with professional athletes, they try and do too much. Mm-hmm. So you look at their week and you're looking for the rest there, and there isn't one there. But you know, our body does need time to rest and recover. And to return, you know, to a normal state. So having a rest day a week is really important, for especially for people out there now, again, you know, training for the marathon or, you know, ramping up their training.
Yeah, okay. So get that rest day in. Okay, we've done compiling your plate. And I just want to talk about, okay, so I read your book and how I adapted mine.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So when I go to the gym, I tend to go at lunchtime, sometimes in the morning now. And how I've done it is I tend to have porridge in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have my milk kefir. And I stick a bit of flaxseed and blueberries in there.
Yep.
But what I've done is I've added in an egg, which I'll have sort of mid-morning. Mm. So to keep it, so that little protein spike.
Yes.
Go to the gym. Straight after the gym, I will go and I will have, say, chicken and rice and vegetables. And then in the evening, I will tend to have what you would call a maintenance plate. So I will have, still get my protein, whether that's chicken or salmon or something like that. Load of veg, including, always have my leafy greens, whether that's kale or spinach, but loads of veg. So what I've done is, mid-afternoon, I'll have a snack as well. Mm. I don't carry loads of eggs around with me. So
no.
I might have a handful of nuts. Mm-hmm. And then as well with those, you know, mid-morning and mid-afternoon snacks, I'll get a bit of fruit in as well. Definitely hitting my five a day, I'm sure of that. The thing I've mainly done is I've shifted the protein forward. So I'm making sure I'm getting my protein early on. And then I might drop my porridge. If I'm not going to the gym that day, I might cut out the porridge. Just have like eggs and kefir and fruit and stuff like that. I'm getting that protein early on and not necessarily having it in the evening, and then cutting back the amount of carbs I'm having if I'm not training. That's basically the change I've made in a nutshell.
Yeah, it's really sensible, because we know that people struggle most with their protein intake in the morning. You know, so most of the listeners, you know, who are going to work, whether you're an athlete or whether you're someone who's going to work in an office, protein is normally the most difficult to get your protein in with breakfast. So that's to be mindful of that and to increase your protein intake there is great. And I think it's the old problem we discussed earlier on of cutting down the fuel at night, you know, if it's not required as well. So I think the biggest thing with any of this, right, is that if you can plan in advance and know what your day in front of you holds, you can then plan with our lives. We're really good about planning work meetings. We're often pretty good about planning our training sessions, but sometimes at the moment we're not as proactive as we could be with our nutrition. And this doesn't mean you have to be extremely anal with it. It just means that you know what your day ahead holds so you can fuel accordingly. Broadly, you're fueling depending on what the day ahead of you has.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm jumping ahead slightly, but depending on the day, if it's a day where you're training more, as you mentioned earlier on, this is a day where you need more fuel. So you need more of these fueling meals. If it's a day where you're sat behind the desk all day, you can't train, or it's a day you're traveling, you're sat in a car all day, you're on a plane, this can be a day where you have more of your maintenance meals and you don't need as much fuel. Yeah. And it's just from making that simple change to your day that, you know, firstly, you can manage energy levels, but actually you can also manage your body composition and, you know, keep a bit of a leaner body fat.
Having those snacks, mid-morning snack, mid-afternoon snack, healthy snacks, that's important to maintain that energy throughout the day, right?
Extremely important. I think one of the things we see with our business clients absolutely is this mid-afternoon snack, because typically the way the day is weighted is that sometimes the day can run away from people, and by the time they've got home, taken the train home, the car, whatever, and they're eating at 7 o'clock, they're absolutely ravenous. So they're eating, you know, on a scale of, let's say, 8 out of 10. So they're going to have the potential to overeat. Whereas having this late afternoon snack, this snack at around about 4 or 5 o'clock, can not only provide some sufficient protein for muscle repair, but it also means they're not as hungry at dinner time.
Yeah.
So it helps to offset that.
One thing I have noticed, I think, since upping my protein earlier and fueling correctly for the day, I feel like I'm just looking at the clock now. It is, I mean, you said good morning when we started, but
it was
actually
ambitious, wasn't it?
He was lying. we're recording in the afternoon. So it's kind of mid-afternoon slump time, really, isn't it? But I've noticed since implementing your plan that I have more energy throughout the afternoon. So by getting this right and fueling up right, is that a simple way to counter the afternoon crash that so many people are familiar with?
Yeah, it is. You know, the two of the common mistakes really are, you know, lunch, under-fueling at lunch, and just trying to, you know, you're having a sandwich or having something light, like a soup. You know, so you're under-fueling at lunch and then perhaps grabbing something in the afternoon. But again, if you're in most offices, that something might be chocolate, that something might be whatever's on offer. So I think even just by making adjustments to your working day, and right, this comes down to performance again, right? Because everyone's got important meetings in the afternoon. Everyone has to present in the afternoon. You know, just making a couple of adjustments to, you know, perhaps even your lunch and your mid-afternoon snack might mean your productivity is increased. So I think it's something that's worth trialing.
I've really enjoyed having a hell of a lot more food at breakfast, I have to be honest. And that's clearly something that you advocate.
Well, it is, because, you know, effectively you're looking to try and improve your fitness. You know, you need to fuel your body in order to improve your fitness levels, your capacity during training. And it's a positive message. Whereas I think there's other approaches that we've talked about earlier on and historical messages which have been more negative. It's almost what you can't eat. You know, this is positive. This is about performance. This is about improving your performance, your energy levels. It's just about tailoring what you eat.
Yeah.
You should enjoy eating.
Yeah.
With all our sports teams, we sit down and eat after a training session. We all eat together. You know, it's really important that that's positive and we enjoy each other's company. You know, and the other thing that I don't think we've touched on yet is the fact that I think a lot of people would eat at their desk.
Yeah.
You know, we know with the American population, 62% would eat at their desk. And there's a couple of issues with that. And I think firstly, we're not mixing and having time to enjoy the company of others. But also, we're sitting there, we're not going out to get our food. So our activity levels are then reduced during our lunch break too. So I think it becomes quite an important time, even just take a bit of time for yourself at lunch.
This is in your filed under non-negotiable.
Filed under non-negotiable.
Training and step away from your desk for lunch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're not eating mindfully either, are you? You've got one eye, you're thinking of something else, thinking of work, perhaps replying to emails or whatever. You're not going to be chewing your food right. It's going to be shoveling it down. It's just really bad practice.
You've hit the nail on the head. It's really bad practice. And one of the things we know, your external stimuli affect how you eat. You know, the music that you listen to affects how you eat. You know, whether you're watching TV affects how engaged you are with the food you eat. Mm. Even the company you have, even how heavy the cutlery is. You know, all these different things when you go out to eat, all these external stimuli play on this. And it's a time when you're eating to, one, be aware of that, but two, I think, step away from your desk and just get away from that pressurized environment and have some time to yourself.
You mentioned earlier about bad fats and in cookies or so on and so forth. I think a lot of workplaces have got like a cookie culture, you know, where it's like, treats, everyone, I've got treats. So when I work at Radio 1, it's mad for treats. It's like a sweet shop. It's unbelievable. And I go there on a Friday. I'm being pretty disciplined the rest of the week. You get to the end of the week, you're a bit tired. And when I'm tired, my discipline and willpower and so on definitely gets depleted. Email goes out just after lunch, cookies in the usual place. I go like full four-year-old. I think last week I probably had about six, and I'm talking reasonable size cookies here, I'm ashamed to say. How bad is cookie culture? What's the truth about sugar?
Mm.
And having a little splurge like that?
So I think, listen, firstly, I think you've got to have some treats in your week.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, that's really important for your psychological well-being. You know, and even athletes, the top athletes, they have treats in their week.
Yeah.
That might be they choose to have a dessert, they might have some chocolate, but you've got to have an off as well. You know, you've got to have time. I think the big thing that you're saying there is the environment, right? So, for example, if it's a chocolate bar here or your favourite dessert here or there, that's fine. You know, you can still stay on plan with that. If it's an afternoon where you're ploughing through, you know, 8-10 cookies and that's happening each week, it's probably going to derail your progress a little bit. But that's really common as well. And, you know, when we're more tired, we make decisions, we're drawn to more sugary, more high-fat foods. You know, there's a shift when we lack sleep, in terms of our hunger hormones. So that what's happening there is physiological as well. But I think it's just being mindful of it and, you know, having a bit of a balance with that too. And in terms of the last ones, you know, the culture within the workplace, there is. There really is a culture, isn't there?
You know, you work in a place where every day people are bringing in all sorts. People think of it as like, oh, he's done a nice thing. Mm. He's slowly poisoning you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I wonder if that will change.
I think it will change. Will it start, you know, it's starting to change in some businesses in terms of the environment they're setting up. You know, again, looking at our sports environments, we have the food that's prepared on site. We have, you know, some great chefs and we just get them to prepare some nice healthy snacks, but often they're a healthier play on your favourite foods. So we often task them to do something that acts as a reward, but it's either a healthier, you know, cereal bar, if it's a healthier dessert, it's something you can have. And I think a lot of workplaces now, some of the tech organisations, especially in some of the management firms, are looking more at, okay, how can we make sure the right food's on site for our workers, which is the way it has to go. Because again, this is coming back to productivity.
Mm. Right, last one.
I feel like I'm stealing fun there.
I'm down with it. I'm with you. Last one, because, I mean, there's loads of things we could talk about. Again, as I've mentioned, you know, gluten-free, all this stuff. But the last one I want to talk to you about is just briefly, is caffeine and coffee.
Yeah, really big one.
I found this to be quite useful, again, reading your book. I'm not a mad coffee drinker, but I've, again, started using it differently since reading your book. So if I'm recording a podcast or if I'm going to the gym, what I'll do is I will go to a well-known high street brand where they only charge 99p for a black coffee. And I will get one of them and an hour before, bang, get that down me, knowing that it should be kicking in just at the point either I'm going to sit down to wax lyrical with a guest or indeed hit the gym.
Caffeine's obviously a massive double-edged sword. So it's something that's part of our culture. You know, one of the things that we know about caffeine is it takes between 45 minutes to an hour to peak in your bloodstream. So one of the things that we do a lot with our athletes and with our footballers is we work back from kickoff at the time that we want it to peak. So we work very hard about individualising our athletes and how much caffeine they have to be at peak form. Now, there's a lot more of this research now that's being used in the US military, in the Marines, but and also in business too. And it's my advice really is to use caffeine strategically. So, you know, to be well-planned with your caffeine intake. Now, there's a couple of things out there we don't hear too much about. Now, you mentioned about the High Street brand. Now, going back to this principle earlier on, we talk about dose. The dose can vary wildly with a cup of coffee. Now, typically, a double shot espresso-based flat white will give you around 150 milligrams of caffeine. But if you're going into a coffee shop on the High Street and ordering a coffee, the caffeine content can vary anywhere between, let's say, around 70 milligrams of coffee right through to over 300 milligrams. So there's a huge variance with that as well that I think, you know, we all need to be mindful of. And I think, you know, my main advice with caffeine really is to firstly, you know, understand your dose and understand the response. So just like you've done there, you know, we know that it takes an hour to peak. It might stay, you know, elevated in the blood for, you know, up to 5 hours. So, you know, we can start to see when we might need another coffee versus when we're going out for another meeting and just saying, I'll have another coffee. And when then you were getting into this habit where we're just living on caffeine each day.
I like to think of it as a performance enhancer since your book. It's about, so if you're fueling right, getting your protein in early, getting your carbs in at the right time, making sure you're eating enough earlier in the day, so on and so forth. That's where your main energy is coming from. You're not going to be relying on the caffeine. And then you're just using that caffeine as a way to peak for your important stuff.
You're absolutely right. Getting your meals and snacks right are what we call getting the big rocks in place. Those are the big things that will sustain your energy levels and how your body runs each day. The caffeine is just a little turbo injection. You know, it's something that we know can improve mental performance, physical performance by up to 8%. So these can be massive gains. It's just about understanding your dose and, like you say, at the right time. And, you know, just like you've done there, I would challenge people to do the same thing. With their meetings, just think about when you're having that coffee, where you need to be right. And it makes a big difference.
Have an hour, make it 50 minutes for you. You'll be peaking 10 minutes in. James, I could talk to you all day. I love this subject. I think your book's brilliant. Let's just sum up. What are the key takeaways? Pick three or four, if you like, or as many as you want, but keep it brief. three or four that someone listening to this needs to think about in terms of fueling their engine correctly for whatever they're doing.
Right. Okay, so I've got one eye on the clock. So firstly, it's get your dose. Get your dose each day. So that's your dose of exercise. You know, manage to fit that in, you know, each day. That's important, first of all, before we even talk about nutrition. Secondly, as we've discussed, that's fuel for the demands of your day ahead. If you're sat behind the chair in the office, you're not exercising, that's more of these maintenance plays with less fuel. If you're training for a marathon, you're doing lots of training, you need more fuel, more of these fueling plates. Recharge effectively, you know, so that means actually eating well, but sleeping well too. Ensuring you're getting your 7 hours or near to that of sleep, because that's important for your energy levels too. And I think off the back of that, it's really about using caffeine strategically, as we've just said. So once you've got the big rocks in place with these fueling and maintenance meals, see what caffeine you need at the right times. And a third one, well, the fifth one, sorry, is the glue. And this is checking in with your body. And this is having a time each week to reflect and see, just as you've done, Simon, how changing your nutrition has affected your energy levels, how it's affected your mood, and how it's affected your training. And to have this time each week is so important. Because it allows you to refine your nutrition, to be in touch with your body, but also then to plan for your week ahead and make sure you've got the shopping ready and everything you need.
Right, James, it's been an absolute pleasure. You've got the brilliant book out. It's called The Energy Plan. But for people who want to find out more of your stuff, what else are you up to and where can they see it?
Oh, right. So, yeah, in terms of social media, I'm James Collins PN on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm slowly getting to grips with Facebook. I'm a bit slow over there. And my website is jamescollinsnutrition.com.
James, been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks very much, Simon. Cheers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.